This program is provided by a trusted partner of the church and is educational, inspirational, and uplifting. It does not necessarily represent the official position of the church.
We're not done being created in the image of God until we're inseparably connected, till our spirit and our body, which we've hopefully taken good care of, is resurrected and glorified in God's image. So the word of wisdom is not just a temporal commandment.
Coming up next, the word of wisdom, a principle with a promise.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Channel now presents the Joseph Smith Papers.
K-Jazz Television, in cooperation with the Church History Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, presents this weekly series highlighting the research of scholars and historians as they prepare for the publication of the Joseph Smith Papers. And now your host, Glenn Rawson.
Among the distinctive characteristics of Latter-day Saints today is the revelation known as the Word of Wisdom. Now, that revelation was given originally on the 27th of February, 1833, in Kirtland, Ohio. It was given in the Newell K. Whitney store. Today, in the Doctrine and Covenants, it's known as Section 89. Now, understanding some of the background behind that revelation, the social issues of the day, illuminates the importance of that revelation to Joseph Smith and the saints of his day.
Mark L. Staker.
Temperance was already well established in Kirtland, the temperance movement, but not just avoiding alcohol, but Dr. Samuel Underhill had already preached to these people here in Kirtland. He had preached to them that they should not drink coffee, that they shouldn't use tobacco, shouldn't use tea. Those prescriptions were already preached in Kirtland. They were already asking these questions when Joseph Smith arrives, and Joseph then has those questions in mind when he receives revelation later on the subject.
Ronald W. Walker.
So it would be very likely, almost inescapable, that he would take on the question of drink, tobacco, and proper use of diet. This was part of the great revolution of Mormonism, bringing forth a new culture, a new society.
Another contemporary figure advocating adherence to a health code was Sylvester Graham, as in graham crackers. And while the Word of Wisdom came in response to the issues of the day, it certainly did not conform to all of the hotly contested opinions about what was healthy and what wasn't.
Stephen C. Harper.
The fact that a revelation solves problems doesn't mean it's not a revelation. In fact, all the more evidence that it is. What good's a revelation that doesn't answer a pressing question or solve a problem? The problem is that you've got a wide diversity of opinions and experts weighing in and so on. A lot of folks think that Sylvester Graham is Joseph's prototype, that Joseph pretty much follows that. That's not true. There's very little on which Joseph Smith and Revelation and Sylvester Graham concur.
Paul Y. Hoskisson.
The Lord knew exactly what was right and what was wrong in Joseph's day. And of all the stuff that could have been put in the Word of Wisdom, of course, the Lord knew what to put in, those things which were of lasting importance.
It was in this room where the Word of Wisdom was revealed, and in this room where it was first announced.
Brigham Young remembers that Emma Smith has some concerns about all the chewing tobacco that's on the ground. That may be part of it, but in addition to that, the men who are meeting in the school, the prophets, are smoking pipes as they meet. And it's a very small room that they're meeting in. There's one later recollection that indicates that 21 of the 22 individuals who were meeting in that room were smoking pipes on the day that Joseph received the revelation, including members of his own family. Joseph receives Section 89, the Doctrine and Covenants. He receives the Word of Wisdom, and he goes from the translation room, the work room where he's working, into the school of the prophets where they're talking, reads the revelation to them. Those 21 men all stand up and throw their pipes in the fireplace immediately because they recognize that this is new information and they're anxious to live that immediately.
A word of wisdom for the benefit of the Council of High Priests assembled in Kirtland and the church, and also the saints in Zion, to be sent greeting, not by commandment or constraint.
We need to know that one of the reasons that made the word of wisdom so flexible to the early members of the church was the way that it was originally printed. The first three verses of the current revelation were originally printed as a preface to the revelation. Those words about not given by commandment or constraint, but as a word of wisdom, an invitation. So it wasn't clear whether that part of the revelation was really part of the revelation or whether it was just an editorial insertion.
Adapted to the capacity of the weak.
The fact that it's adapted to the weakest of all saints tells me that the Lord gives it knowing our capacities, knowing our fallenness, knowing our tendencies to do things or want things that aren't really very good for us sometimes. So it's not more than we can do. Verse 4 of the Revelation is terrific. It's the verse that says, because of evils and designs which do and will exist in the hearts of conspiring men in the last days, I, the Lord, warn you and forewarn you. He's warning Joseph. He's forewarning me, telling me way in advance, because there are conspirators in the latter days.
The first of those warnings given by the Lord was this one. Inasmuch as any man drinketh wine or strong drink among you, behold, it is not good. Alcohol in Joseph's day, it was a most significant problem.
You have people drinking 15 to 20, maybe 25 gallons of hard cider or whiskey each year. It wasn't just men drinking. It was women drinking. It was children drinking. Consumption at breakfast, at lunch, at dinner. There probably couldn't have been a social activity in America without spirits flowing very freely. So you have this immense consumption of alcohol. We think we may have problems today, but the consumption levels in the 1830s probably were three times the consumption of alcohol today. It was an incredible social problem.
One scholar wrote a terrific book about Joseph's world called The Alcoholic Republic. And I was stunned when I read it to realize what staggering amounts of alcohol people consumed in Joseph Smith's time and place. It flowed like water.
The day before the revelation was given, Section 89, there was a national day set apart for calling to the attention of the American public the evils of drink.
The revelation says in verse 5 that inasmuch as any man drinketh wine or strong drink among you, behold, it is not good, neither meat in the sight of your father, only in assembling yourselves together to offer up your sacraments before him. There's a couple of things that I think are very key in that verse that we need to understand. Number one, wine and strong drink cover all of the alcoholic beverages of the day. That is, fermented drinks and distilled drinks. So those people who want to get an exception for fermented drinks in the Word of Wisdom, it's not there. It's all alcoholic beverages. They're forbidden, except in your sacraments.
when Brigham Young got to Utah, he later evoked Section 27 of the Doctrine and Covenants, which says it doesn't matter what you use for the sacrament if you do it with an eye single to God's glory, remembering the Savior's body and blood, which was shed for the remission of our sins. So he says we use water instead of wine for the sacrament. So I don't want any people wondering why, you know, we don't drink wine on sacrament day. It's because it doesn't matter, and President Brigham Young shifted us over to using water.
And again, tobacco is not for the body, neither for the belly, and is not good for man.
Tobacco is prescribed in the 1600s and forward as the antidote to just about every malady under the sun, including asthma, strangely, flatulence. Just about any problem you have, you can solve by taking tobacco.
We cannot conceive of it today, but men would go into private homes or churches, and they just spit it on the floor. The spittle, this dark, ugly, terrible spittle, is just part of the custom. They'd spit it out, and then you'd have to bring people along to clean it up. It was a filthy practice, horrible practice. But it was just one of the prevailing social customs at the time. It was very much a problem in Kirtland. Drink less so, but tobacco was openly used.
And again, hot drinks are not for the body or belly.
I know there's a lot of controversy with some people about what that really means, hot drinks. Again, in a later reminiscence, one of the members of the church said that summer of 1833, Joseph Smith got up in Kirtland and said, "What do we mean by hot drinks? Well, what do we drink with our meals? Is it not coffee and tea?" Well, that's what the word of wisdom means when it says hot drinks. It means coffee and tea. Well, that's not unique either in the health literature of Joseph Smith's day. There were a lot of people who didn't like hot tea and hot coffee, but they also didn't like hot chocolate, some of them. And some of them didn't like hot water to drink. And some of them didn't think you should drink hot soups either. So, but the word of wisdom is really about coffee and tea, not about the physical temperature of the liquid that you're using. And that interpretation of tea and coffee holds all the way through the whole history of the word of wisdom. It's always been interpreted since that summer of 1833 as tea and coffee. And that interpretation of tea and coffee holds all the way through the whole history of the word of wisdom. It's always been interpreted since that summer of 1833 as tea and coffee.
And then in the Revelation, the Lord prescribes what can be used and how it ought to be. This, for example: "All wholesome herbs God hath ordained for the constitution, nature, and use of man."
We don't hear too many sermons on the proper use of vegetables or herbs in our diet. We haven't heard a lot of sermons about using whole grains. This is the wonderful thing about the Word of Wisdom. There is so much there that it's a revelation that continues to yield insight and perspective.
Notice how many times it says use. Use these things in these ways. Use these things in those ways. Not only does it tell us what to use, but it tells us how to use them. It very frequently says with prudence and with thanksgiving. You're supposed to receive all the Lord's bounty with gratitude and use them prudently or sparingly, as in the case of meat, right?
One of those things prescribed, not proscribed, for the use of man was meat. However, the Revelation declares that meats are to be used sparingly. Now, that word, sparingly, has caused some confusion.
Americans in those days ate a lot of meat. When it says eat meat sparingly, that's a term which is a little bit nebulous. But if we put it in the context of the 1830s, it means let's not have meat for every meal.
The word of wisdom is just that. It's wise counsel.
Why did the revelation come as a word of wisdom, not by way of commandment, as all the rest of them, we call them the commandments. That's what Joseph Smith called them, commandments. Each of his revelations, they were commandments. Nobody really knows. There's not good historical data to help clarify that. But a common perspective among historians today is that it took some time for people to adapt and to adjust to live that because they had developed habits that were very difficult to overcome. And so initially it wasn't a commandment, but later on when they had sufficient time to overcome their habits, then it was a commandment.
The revelation is a word of divine wisdom, a word of wisdom. It's an appeal to the saints to do better. It's a kind invitation.
The immediate reaction of the saints in Kirtland to this revelation? Well, it was to take this divine invitation and attempt to apply it in their lives.
There was a real effort to comply, but it wasn't successful. And it goes back to this culture that Americans had that made drink and tobacco so pervasive. These habits were so ingrained. And so you have the saints breaking themselves against taking the ideal and breaking themselves against the social customs of the time. And indeed, ingrained habits that just were so serious, so difficult to break.
Then the question comes up, what happens if a member of the church doesn't keep the word of wisdom? Does that impinge on their standing in the church? This is February of 1834 when they were discussing this issue. And after the matter had been discussed in council in Kirtland, Joseph Smith proposed a resolution that for all intents and purposes is very similar to our current church position today. The resolution confirmed by vote of the Kirtland High Council read, and it was the prophet who proposed this, quote, "No official member in this church is worthy to hold an office after having the word of wisdom properly taught him, and he, the official member, neglecting to comply with it or obey it." Well, the issue doesn't go away again, because in May of 1837, again in the Messenger and Advocate, they publish another statement on it. Quote, "Have not the authorities of the church and council assembled in this place, i.e. Kirtland, decided deliberately and positively that if any official member of this church shall violate or in any way wise disregard the words of wisdom which the Lord has given for the benefit of the saints, he shall lose his office? What official member does not know this? Brethren, either we believe this to be a revelation from God or we do not."
Notwithstanding this firm stand, well, there were still those who struggled with the revelation, and the problem was serious.
By Nauvoo, Joseph had came to realize that this might tear the church apart, might tear the fabric of the church apart. And so he backed off.
Helen Mar Whitney, in her reminiscences, talks about how sickly Nauvoo was. The whole time they were there, the ague, as they called it in those days, whether it was malaria or something else, I don't know, bothered them all the time they were in Nauvoo. And Helen Mar Whitney mentions that the people, the saints in Nauvoo, really pestered Joseph Smith to please let them have their tea and their especially their teas, and maybe coffee and maybe a hot toddy, because it helped relieve the symptoms of the ague. And Joseph relented at this point and said, yes, if you're using it for that health reason, maybe it's okay if you go ahead. Now, I'm really vastly paraphrasing and adding between the lines of the literature. But Helen Mar Whitney makes this really interesting and insightful comment. She says, that was the beginning of us not keeping the word of wisdom strictly, when we were allowed to have our teas to relieve the symptoms of the ague in Nauvoo.
One gets the sense that Joseph, and particularly Brigham, sort of gave up on that generation. Their hopes lay with the younger generation that could be properly taught and raised to a higher standard. I think the history of the Word of Wisdom is a history of jumps and starts, uneven progress. As the saints work toward achieving this ideal that they had been given in 1830, I think it is a record of God's love and tolerance and patience. I think it is a record of the patience of church leaders, their tolerance and patience, their love and kindness, and in lifting as quickly as they could the saints to understand and achieve this great ideal.
The fact that church leaders were lenient with the saints when it came to the Word of Wisdom should not be taken to mean that church leaders felt any less strongly about it.
It really took 20 years of pioneering before Brigham could get back to the issue of the Word of Wisdom. He's constantly thinking about it. He's constantly talking about it in conference. He's constantly mentioning it as an ideal. But it's probably not until the late 1860s that he begins to tell the saints, moderation is not the ideal any longer, but it's abstinence. That's the ideal. And that's what changes during the administration of President Young. From moderation to really abstinence, particularly involving hard drink and tobacco.
And in time, abstinence did become the understanding of the saints. Now, we mentioned earlier, this is a revelation, a principle with a promise. That promise is powerful.
The revelation is a covenant. If you do these particular things, here are some very specific blessings that will accrue to you. In fact, the specific words are, those who remember to keep and do these sayings, walking in obedience to the commandments, shall find health in their navel and marrow in their bones, shall run and not be weary, walk and not faint, and the destroying angel shall pass by them and not slay them. I believe that that we can count, generally speaking, on increased health and strength, the ability to run and not be weary, walk and not faint. But that, to me, is trivial in comparison to the big prize. Hidden treasures of knowledge. Hidden treasures of knowledge. I think there are treasures of knowledge that a person can get by remembering to keep and do the sayings of the Word of Wisdom and walking in obedience to the commandments that they can get in no other way.
When it talks about run and not be weary and walk and not faint, if you go back to the Old Testament where that quote comes from, Isaiah chapter 40, verse 31, it's talking about those who have gone into apostasy are going to faint, but those who have not gone into apostasy will be healthy, will be spiritually healthy. The promise is that those who trust in the Lord will have this spiritual health in them. If you keep the Word of Wisdom, there's no promise that you're not going to be sick. All of us die eventually of something. The Word of Wisdom doesn't give us immortality. It gives us spiritual blessings here and now, which leads to spiritual immortality.
In Joseph Smith's revelations, particularly the Word of Wisdom, the body is sacred. The body is godly. It's to be taken good care of. It's to be looked after. It's to be honored, valued. It's our inheritance. It's our temple.
And when we come back, how does a man who has lived his life being persecuted by others for his religious views treat others when their views in religion differ from his? Next week, Joseph Smith, The Constitution, and Religious Freedom. I'm Glenn Rawson. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Joseph Smith Papers here on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.